You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
This place is special.
Get asked all the time, where's your favorite place to take College Game Day? And I say every time, Eugene, Oregon.
Yes.
This is the best crowd. Honestly, it's 6 in the morning here.
Yeah.
It's dark. Yeah. It's raining. They don't care.
No, they don't.
These fans right here, pound for pound, are as good as any college football fans in the country.
This program is staged to compete and to win championships.
Oregon is going to be in the championship game. Can you believe the magical season this has become?
When we watch this film, does our effort beat theirs?
Here's Bo Nix, guns it! Touchdown, Oregon!
Been making deposits, time to cash a check.
Sound at Austin, which is deafening for an Oregon 15-point win. Chip Kelly still does not have a win against his former school, and we say farewell.
Man, it feels great to be a Duck.
Welcome to the QB11 Show, presented by Scoop Duck, with Doug, Andrew, and J-Hop. Here are the guys with the latest scoop.
Welcome back to the QB11 Show, presented by Scoop Duck. I am Doug Scott. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. I hope everyone had a wonderful holiday season. We are going to, right now, give you the second half of our, I don't want to call it an interview, of our podcast episode recorded about a week ago with Hithloday. So this is where QB and Hithloday and myself go over the review of the entire Oregon 2023 season roster, position by position group. So we gave you the offense on our last episode. This episode is now the defense. So sit back, listen, and enjoy. And we'll be back with you in a few days to cover the upcoming Fiesta Bowl and the other New York Six and New Year Six. I don't know why I always say New York Six. The other New Year Six and playoff games. So we'll be back. QB and I will be back with you in a couple days, but enjoy the second half of the Hithloday episode. Thank you.
There's also some defensive factors, which is, this would be a good time to transition.
Yeah, let's talk about defense. You want to finish your thought there on whatever you were going to say about the defense, or you just want to start over?
No, because it's about the secondary, and we should talk about the front, because the front is, like, this was sort of the news. So, I think the biggest pleasant surprise for me, you may recall when we recorded prior to the season, the thing that I was trying to ring the bell about, sort of caution everybody, was that the defensive front was going to be made up in its middle layer of true freshmen, right? Like, if you wanted to consider, you know, or at least sort of at the edges, right? You know, their top layer was going to be vets, right? You know, they had Dorlis, they had Birch, you know, they had Mace Funa. You know, in the middle, of course, they had vets too, you know, Amavai and Taimani and so forth. But then, of course, they, you know, their third layer were going to be freshmen, but like everybody's third layer is freshmen. However, the interesting thing about Oregon's defensive front is that the middle layer, you know, most teams, you know, when they're confronting a situation like Oregon was, where they chased out their entire middle layer, right, you know, Oregon's entire OLB room left, except for Mace Funa, right, or you know, remember everybody, you know, like all those OLBs who couldn't get to the passer, and Oregon was like, all right, well, we're done with you, go away. So Oregon like didn't have like all of them, they're all gone, you know, so the entire like middle layer, you know, anybody who's like younger than Brandon Dorlus, you know, all gone. Who wasn't a freshman anyway, so most teams who'd be in that position, they would backfill in that middle layer with like, let's find some, some three stars who've got like, you know, 300 snaps under their belt, you know, they won't be great, but at least they know what they're doing, you know, like that's how most teams would have done this, right? But that's not what Oregon did. Oregon was like, now we'll just get even more four-star freshmen and we'll play them. And so that's what I was, if you recall, that's what I was ringing the bell about, you know, about like, if Oregon's going to have a vulnerability, you know, that's what it's going to be. I don't like all the, or there's a possibility here that like, oh man, you're playing freshmen in the defensive front and you're definitely going to have to rotate in these freshmen. And I don't know, man, they're talented, but like freshmen in the front, well, they answer the bell. Like, holy cow, you know, like these freshmen, you know, Uyunglele, and Tatum Tuiati and Blake Purchase and the redshirt freshman, Marion Winston, and all these guys, like, you know, what a great season. These young freshmen had, like, and what a foundation for the future. Like, I'm, you know, really excited about this defensive front. You know, Oregon made, Oregon put down a marker here that they trusted their recruiting for the defensive line, and it's paying off.
Yeah, I think they were proven right too. I mean, first and foremost, like, I have to give off St. Jordan Birch love because I hope he comes back. That was the most dominant performance by an edge run defender in Oregon. And then in my lifetime for Oregon, I can't think of anybody else who was nearly as good at setting the edge and playing the run. And he was just so smart the way he played off blocks, the way he played the screen game, the way he played down the line. Like, he was unbelievable. And then it was really the trio of freshmen beyond that impressed me so much. And it freed up Dorlus to play inside more, where he's far more effective as a pass rusher. So I was stoked with the way that Mateo and Blake Purchase and Tatum Tuioti played. As we saw in the Pac-12 title game, without Jordan Birch, the growing pains of that room would have been substantially more.
Sure. But in terms of like depth, I mean, that's the thing about studying, you know, defensive fronts in the Pac-12 is that, like, you know, Oregon in there, you know, just the folks who play up on the line of scrimmage. Whether you call them, you know, defensive tackles, defensive ends, or outside linebackers, just, you know, in Oregon system, like, let's not get so technical as to look at, like, call it what their techniques are, you know, weak side, strong side, the jack or whatever. Like, just if you play up on the line of scrimmage, Oregon had a dozen of them who were part of the regular, you know, rotation. Are you kidding? Like, nobody else in the Pac-12 had a dozen dudes in the regular rotation, all or almost all of which, Jake Shipley being the exception, were four stars. Or I guess Dorlus is also not a four star, although that's a crazy oversight by the scouting services. You're playing like four stars anyway. The grades are all exceptional. Who are getting regular rotation, like, the guy who, Shipley got the fewest snaps, the second fewest was for Ware Hudson, or at least, you know, meaningful snaps excluding garbage time. Just deep, like deep and talented and big, and like nobody in the Pac-12 could touch him. Good Lord. Most of the rooms there, you know, line of scrimmage player rooms were half this size, like effective, you know, like, obviously, you know, they would on their roster would list a comparable number of dudes, but like effective number of dudes that they could put out and play would be like half this size. And like, you better believe that that made, you know, made a difference. And that's just number of effective bodies. Their level of play, you know, was phenomenal, and it could get better. You know, like, a lot of these guys are sort of holdovers from before, you know, the sort of step change in defensive line recruiting and, you know, that's happened with the staff. So like, oh man, I really like where this defensive front is going.
Yeah. I think next year is going to be really interesting, right? Because obviously you had this like huge, as you've touched on earlier, right? You had like all these guys who are like fifth, sixth, seventh year players, particularly on the interior, right? Making up the bulk of your rotation, right? You got Dorlis, you've got Popo, you've got Taki, you've got Casey Rogers, who turned 25 years old today, I saw on his Twitter. You know, so you got all these guys that are making, and even Keon Ware Hudson, you know, he doesn't play a lot of snaps, but he's what, a 2019 kid, so he's been around a while too. So, you know, and then behind them, you've got a bunch of true freshmen who mostly saw garbage time reps, right? So, it's going to be really interested to see what happens in the line. And obviously we kind of know what's going to happen along the edges, right? Cause you got all those true freshmen that we talked about that played this year that are obviously going to come back next year. If Jordan Birch comes back as well, then the defensive end and edge wrote and outside linebacker rotations are pretty well set. But on the interior, do you just roll in all these like class of 23 kids that were highly recruited, highly rated, looked good in minimal garbage time snaps? Or, you know, do you got to go out to the portal and at least get a few bodies that have some more experience there? And I think it's probably
I have a prediction.
Yeah.
I think that they're going to do exactly what they did with the edge room last year. I think that they're going to bring in a couple transfers, one or two transfers. They're going to clear out the people that aren't either 23 or 24 recruits, and then they're going to roll with that insanely talented and deep group of about 10 guys from those two classes on the interior behind the front line transfers. Because like all due respect, and I mean, like, I really mean that, because like the guys that were a part of this program and gave us their all this year deserve nothing more but our respect. But like, outside of Dorlis, not a single one of those guys would be recruited going forward by the staff. Like the length and the talent in the defensive line room of the incoming guys and the guys that were on campus but redshirted last year or played in sparing like garbage time roles, that's the target body type and physical traits for the staff.
Yeah, I mean, if you look on the inside, you've got Keon Ware Hudson has one more year of eligibility left. You've got Amari Washington and Ben Roberts from the 22 class, and then you've got Johnny Bones, Terrence Green, Ashton Porter.
Amari Washington's 23.
Oh, my bad. But he didn't redshirt this year, so I already upgraded him on my chart. So my mistake. So Amari Washington, Bowens, Green, Mikael Gardner, as well, and then obviously you've got Aiden Breland coming in. You've got Elijah Rushing coming in, again, more of a defensive end edge player there. Ashton Porter, again, another kind of defensive end player, but I think you're spot on, QB. I know Oregon hosted the massive nose tackle from Michigan State, and if they were able to land him, like that one makes so much sense, right? Like that's probably the one position where you need a plug and play nose, probably.
And notice the length there, right? Like he's 6'5". He's big. Like he's long too, and that's like Oregon, like uncharacteristically relative to what Dan Lanning has recruited since he's been on campus, was very short on the interior this year, and that will not be the case going forward.
I mean, it's really just a question of what happens with Ben Roberts. I mean, I think he's the only...
Him and Keon Ware Hudson are the two guys that are not...
Oh, yeah, Ware Hudson.
Either 23 or 24 guys.
Yeah, I mean, the rest of it, yeah, exactly. You know, it in terms of who still has eligibility, but who is not yet, at this point, transferred out, I think it's just, you know, Roberts and Ware Hudson. I'm not sure,
yep,
you know, but like, I mean, Ben Roberts is probably dedicated nose tackle. You know, you're right about his length, but like, that's not, you know, I think they, Well, I don't know. You know, we didn't see him much this year, so, you know, beats me. But like, you know, to QB's point, like, well, of course it's going to be, you know, 23 and 24 guys. Like, they don't have anybody else. Like, and, you know, plus, you know, probably a transfer to, like, you know, like, he can't possibly be wrong about that. Like, there's no other option.
Yeah, especially at the interior positions, which, you know, as we know, are hard. There's not a lot of good ones available in the portal anyway.
I mean, there never are. But that's, you know, they recruited really well. The interior defensive line.
They're going to play those guys. Know, like the guys that they recruited are going
to
get
in 2023, and they sat on the bench to you know, they went to the training table. You know,
yeah.
And 2024 is, you know, when you're going to see them. I mean, this is. The roster management 101, Doug, like, of course you're going to see Amari Washington, Mikael Gardner, and Terrence Green, and Johnny Bowens in 2024.
Yeah, I think there's a front line of guys that's going to come in from the portal, whether it's Harmon, obviously Oregon's recruiting Walter Nolan. We'll see what else manifests in the portal here over the coming weeks, but I think Oregon's going to take two guys out of the portal. That'll be the front line. That'll be the starters. And then I think that they're going to just absolutely smash reps into that young group of both true redshirt incoming freshmen and true sophomores in the case of Amari Washington, because that's the future. And that group is going to be absolutely sick.
Well, just the length. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is, you know, you don't get it from, or it's not something that you can pick, come away with from just looking at rosters where all you get is their like height and weight. And if you're like a dum-dum who doesn't watch film and you're just saying, well, my, you know, 6'3", 290-pound guy and your, you know, 6'4", 295-pound guy, well, they're probably the same dudes. Like, no, they're not.
Not even close.
Like, they're, you know, when you're, you know, talking about leverage and body proportions and like the ability to, you know, like interior pass rush, the ability to, you know, jack up and, you know, prevent the offensive lineman from re-anchoring so that you can actually get past him as opposed to just occupying him, like, so that you can like get off blocks as opposed to just like consuming a double team and hoping that you're, you know, that's the difference between a defensive lineman who enables a linebacker to make the tackle and a defensive lineman who makes the tackle on his own so that the linebacker can go back and play pass coverage the way that a defensive structure intends him to play. Like, you know, that's football, or that's how you leverage an advantage, you know, with personnel. That's how you get one player to do a job instead of two players, you know, doing the one job. Like, you know, that's why this is the defensive structure that national championship, you know, teams run, you know, as opposed to like, well, just let's just get the fattest dude possible. Fat dudes are who we have on the defensive line. Yeah. And that's what, you know, and I mean, so many West Coast teams just struggle to even find that, you know, because like they just feed them nothing but quinoa and kale out here. And so they're real happy if they can just find anybody who can clear three bills. Like, but it's like your job's not done. Like that's not enough. And like that's the awesome thing about seeing guys like Amari Washington or Terrence Green, where you're just like, those arms, man, like, oh my god. Yeah
Agreed.
All right, linebackers.
Okay, this recruiting podcast, this is the 2023 review podcast.
I guess do we finish the line at all, or want to talk a little bit?
Let's talk about the freshman
at the edge size. I'd love to talk about the freshman edges.
There's one other thing that I want to say again, which is not to, I don't want to relitigate the conference championship game, but I will say, look, man, the Mint defensive structure, every defense has to choose a vulnerability, right? You only get 11 dudes, and the offense is always going to have an advantage over you in something because the offense gets to choose the play. And the Mint defensive structure, the vulnerability that it chooses to have is preventing just, you know, 3-yard rushes, like up the middle. It's just the structure of the defense. Like, I'm not going to recapitulate all the reasons why. Just look at the damn structure. Like, it's obvious. They drop all the linebackers into coverage and they're built like safeties. And it's a 3-down front. Like, and it's, you know, if you look at the per play success rates, this is the weakest quadrant of football. It's the only, you know, Oregon was 58.3%, you know, defensive success rate against the run. They did a really good job of stopping explosive runs. You know, they only allowed 8.5% of opponents' designed runs to gain 10 plus yards. That's a phenomenal number. I mean, it's absolutely incredible. But like, if an opposing offense wants to sort of run at them for 3 yards a play, you know, every single time, you know, that's just what the Mint defense is going to allow. And even if, you know, Dan Lanning had a magic wand and all, you know, more money than Croesus, like, you will always be the, you know, the structural, you know, flaw against this. I wouldn't want them to play Navy, you know, or at least before they change the cut blocking rules so that Navy would just be blowing up their kneecaps. Like, all right, it's just how this is going to go. So, like, if you're a fan who sort of, you know, wets the bed when you see Oregon giving up 3 yards a run, like, you need to find a different defense to watch, because it's just going to happen. Like, the good news is, if that's the only thing that you can, that the opposing offense can do, like, they're never going to win a game. Like, there's no such thing as a team that can win football games running 3 yards at a time and only running 3 yards a time. They have to be able to combine it with something else. That's why Air Force, for example, doesn't just do that anymore. You know, they have to be able to throw the ball and do a bunch of other things. You know, right. So, yeah, but that's it. That's what I wanted to say about the defensive front. Is that, like, yeah, they're not made up of, you know, giant, you know, blocks of granite that, you know, running backs just bounce off of, because that is not the structure of this defense by choice.
I agree, but I think that once you upgrade the defensive line to where this thing's going to be in about a year or 2 years, that will be less of a foregone conclusion.
Sure.
But I'm ready to talk about the linebackers if you are, Doug.
Did we want to talk about the edge players at all? You feel like we covered that?
I feel like we covered it pretty good. I mean,
pass rushers.
There's insane talent in that room going forward. And like, if you can have Birch back plus the three true freshmen, and like, honestly, Elijah Winston deserves a mention, because I thought he played really good. Is it Elijah? No, Amarion.
Amarion.
All right. There's been Amarion. So many of them that, Amarion was actually a very good player for us this year. So that's a deep and talented room going forward. We'll see if Jake Shipley makes it through yet another transfer portal season.
We'll see. No, I mean, they all purchased Tuioti, Mateo, Winston all had their moments this year. You know, they all are a little different. But I think the nice thing is with all of them, plus Burge, plus rushing, and your new guy, you know, and Jaden Moore, who's already on the roster, and was it Daniels that's coming in as well in this next class? Like, there's a lot of pieces there, and it's just a kind of like the defensive line, it's a cream rise to the top kind of situation, right? Yeah, let's move over to the linebackers. So I think we employed, five linebackers. But certainly, you saw as Jacobs got back during the course of the year, we really were kind of down to the primary three in that room, I think, that we're playing toward the end, right?
Yeah, it was. I mean, Betcher played more early, and then once Jacobs came back, it really got pared down to Hill, Bassa, and Jacobs.
There was a sixth. We saw Devin Jackson at times in the rotation as well. But yeah, basically.
Yes. And Connor Sully is the other one who had more reps early in the year, and they pretty much phased out by the end as well. So,
and that was true with Betcher. So it, like, and Devin Jackson was primarily playing in garbage time. So it, in my opinion, it was those three guys. And I thought that both Bassa and Hill made pretty big steps forward this year as players. There were still times where Bassett left his feet too often on tackles, but I thought that the overall attempt to upgrade your ability to play sideline to sideline, scrape, make plays, and then also cover was vastly improved. What is your take on that, Hill?
I mean, definitely. Like, I think a large part of it is simply I agree with you. Yes, I think each of these players, you know, was simply, you know, better than they were last year. Well, Jacobs, they didn't have access to last year. Well, nobody did. He was injured. And then they didn't have access to him at the beginning of the year either, because he was injured through, you know, until the Wazoo game in week 8. Jacobs, you know, played very well. I think the larger part of it is simply, you know, just being better in this system, and also, you know, the line just being more appropriate, you know, because the way that this linebacking core is supposed to work in this defensive front is they're really supposed to just kill the stuff that gets through. They're not supposed to be making the play on their own, if you know what I mean. Like and so, like, there were so many plays, so many of the bad plays for, like, Bossa on my tally sheet last year had to do with asking him being asked to do stuff that he can't do. And the reason why he doesn't have so many of those on my tally sheet, I think, this year is because the line made it so that he wasn't being asked to have to do those things, not because he suddenly developed the ability to, like, throw offensive linemen around. Like, he didn't grow 6 inches and 50 pounds of muscle. Like, it was that the defensive line got better. You know, that's what I'm trying to say.
Those guys were kept clean. And then, like, when Jacobs got healthy, it was very clear that he was the best player in the room. And, he elevated his play as the season went on, and he kind of got back in the groove of things. So I think that, like, really a nucleus of Bassa and Jacobs going into next year is something that you can be comfortable with. The question is going to be is who develops beyond that.
Yeah, definitely. And the, you know, the other thing is that, like, just as like the field general stuff, like, I mean, it was super clear watching on film that, like, Bossa really knows what he's doing, you know, like he's like his ability to sort of diagnose, call out plays, and guide the rest of the defense to where it needs to be. Like, I like the plays where he rotates out, the rest of the defense plays worse for the lack of his presence. Like, that's, I mean, we have a word for that. It's called leadership.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think that he did a great job calling the defense this year. And I think that I'm just hoping that at some point, through physical development and training table and strength and conditioning, he can get to a place where he's a more consistent tackler. Cause he does kill us at times with his tackling.
I mean, yeah. Like, again, it's sort of why I went on a little rant about the Mint defensive structure, is that, like, if you're in a position where your linebacker is, like, has to, if you're in a position where in this defensive structure, your linebacker, you know, has to make the play, then you've already lost. It is the reason why I don't, like, sweat that so much. Like, it should be a gang tackle, you know, there should be, like, you know, 3 different safeties on that dude already. The defensive line, you know, should have prevented that offensive lineman from getting up to that guy. That said, you know, you're not wrong. Like, you're not wrong about his tackling ability.
Yeah, I mean, it's just an area that's going to need to consistently continue to improve. And I think that getting some more guys in the room that can call the defense and play a competent level football. I thought Jamal Hill did an admirable job, and as the year went on, I thought he progressed nicely. But you can't expect much more from a converted safety than you got from him in 1 year.
I mean, I think converting safeties is appropriate for this position, like the way that it plays. Like, I mean, hell, Utah's been, like, almost exclusively playing converted safeties at their linebacker position for, like, you know, close on to 8 years now. And they've had, you know, almost every one of the linebackers that they've sent to the NFL has been a converted safety. Like, I don't, you know, I don't really think that's the nature of the problem. I just think that, like, Hill's feeding fast enough. Like, you know, I'm sort of looking forward to some of the new blood that they're bringing.
Yeah, I mean, I think that like inside linebacker, there's no problem with guys that convert positions. I mean, for me, in my personal opinion, it's more a matter of like, okay, who are the guys that who are the guys that can run like a converted safety but are actually recruited linebackers, and those are the guys that we're bringing in.
Well, Devin Jackson, like, that's why I was talking about Devin Jackson. Like,
but he doesn't play. He's like, not, he's just, I don't know. When I watch him, like, I really struggle with him because I obviously, like, there's so much to like athletically, but at the same time, he's just a guy that looks lost on the field. He's not, he doesn't play particularly instinctively. He struggles to sift through the trash. Like, if a blocker gets to him, it's basically an end of the rep for him. Like, there's just, he's still like undersized for the position naturally. And he like, I'm not saying that we should have a bunch of take on linebackers because this isn't the 1980s, but like having guys that can at least somewhat play off of blocks is still an important part of the game. And he at no point so far has proven to be able to do that. Now, maybe next year is the year he can do that. But I think that, like, if you look at the profile of the guys that we're bringing in now, we're getting that horizontal speed and the ability to scrape and make plays in the cover. But we're also getting guys that are big enough to make tackles on first contact and play off the occasional block.
The reason that I brought up Jackson is simply, like I said, I'm an empiricist, and his on my tally sheet in the non-garbage time, you know, reps that I have for him at the beginning of the year, like against Texas Tech, for example, like, yeah, dude, and against Wazoo, like, yeah, he's out of position. He's playing kind of lost. However, towards the end of the year, like, I've got a lot of really good plays for him against Arizona State and against USC, where Dillingham's throwing the kitchen sink at the dude. And like, if anybody's going to try to trick and confuse a linebacker, it's Kenny Dillingham. And then, you know, following that up, you know, Lincoln Riley, right, who like had this really interesting thing where the first play of every drive, Lincoln Riley pulled out a weirdo run play. It was this kind of fun thing. I actually really liked it, where he did this funky run play, first play every drive, and they'd have Devin Jackson in for a couple of them. And like, first of all, that dude is
fast. He's fast. Like, he's legitimately fast.
Like
compared to anybody
fast
on the team fast. And, but
number one, number two, tackles really well. Like, remember we were saying about Justin Jacobs, where he's built like a spider and like his super long arms, you know, like all he needs to do is get a fingertip on you. And just the way that the torque law works, like, he's going to bring you down. I like the way that Jackson tackles. It reminds me of Justin Jacobs, you know, because for that reason. And number three, I definitely saw improvement over the course of the year. Like, the dude was playing much better at the later part of the year than the beginning part of the year. I really just think he needs to bulk up more. And he's a young guy, and like, it's easy to get him some chicken. Like, I mean,
yeah, yeah, I hope you're right.
I'm excited to see if he does.
I
want to
see it because, like, I love the athletic skill set is off the charts, right? Like, as you said, like, you put him up in a foot race against anybody on the field, regardless of position, he's going to be right there in it. But what I need to see is, like, can he trigger quickly? Can he play with instincts? Can he get through the trash on stuff that's not just a spill and kill run, and make a play in the box? And if he can do that, then he's got like unbelievably high upside. But we haven't seen him consistently do that yet, which I'm hoping, like, this is kind of like when you're looking at where he is.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Did I lose you?
Oh, I've been talking to myself
No, you're good. We only just lost the last,
lost you for a second. It's just...
Oh, yeah.
You just said, if you look at where he is...
If you look at where he is now in his development cycle, like, this is kind of the put up or shut up year for him, right? Like, this next coming season, it's year three. It's time for him to put that together. And, fingers crossed, I hope he can, because if he can, like, you don't find a lot of linebackers that run 10-500 meters, right? So, I hope that we can find that fully developed skill set coming into the spring or the summer, and enhance our linebacker depth with it.
Well, that's the interesting part about the linebacker room next year is obviously you've got this, hopefully you get Jacobs back. You got Jacobs and Bossa as your obviously returning starters, and then hopefully, you know, Betcher and Sule and those guys are bit players at best. And then it's like, okay, which of Jackson, Mixon, and your three freshmen are going to, you know, get meaningful reps backing up the two starters? And I think that's going to really be an interesting storyline to watch.
I agree, Doug.
Hiss dropped. Oh, you're here. Hiss dropped.
Yes, I agree.
Okay. You're...
I dropped?
I thought you were going to say, let's talk about secondary.
You disappeared from my screen and then came back. I don't know what's going on. Wonky internet stuff.
Sorry, guys.
No, you're all good. You're all good. Anything more on the linebackers?
No.
No, I agree. I think it's going to be Jackson, I agree it's going to be the put-up or shut-up year. I suspect he'll put up, but if he has to shut up, like, it's going to be a stacked room, and the staff's not afraid to play freshman.
No, and I think that one of those three guys will be ready to go. And so either way, I think you're going to have better playable depth this year. Is it, even if Jackson doesn't become like an all-everything player, like his athletic talent could suggest he might be able to, like, he's still going to be very solid.
It is freaky how fast he is, though.
Yeah, like, I think he's probably the fastest backer we've ever had. And, like, he's a legitimate track guy. Like,
yeah, he routinely is one of the fastest guys on the team.
He went over 23 miles an hour last year.
All right. Before we talk about the defensive backfield, we got to set the parameters. First of all, are we talking about nickels with safeties, with corners, or separately by themselves?
I think we just talk about the whole room, the whole defensive back room.
You're going to kill me.
Let's work from the I think this would be easier if we work from the outside in.
I like that plan. Okay. Corners.
Whatever makes you guys happy. I don't care. I just want to see you guys smile.
Or you're not going to see us at all. I think the cornerback room, the outside cornerback room, I think you have to be pleased with. I was not able to do film study on Kyree Jackson at Alabama prior to his transfer to Oregon. He was a backup and a cornerback, and just the quality of film that I was able to find on him was so poor that I really had no idea what Oregon was getting. And it turned out what they were getting was really good. He's long, he was athletic, he was able to play man coverage, you know, excellently. He had a little DPI problem at the beginning of the year, got over it. It was very strange because, usually your best cornerback is the guy that the opposing QBs don't throw against. And yet he was the guy that opposing QBs talked themselves into throwing against Kyree Jackson. And then he'd knock that stuff out of the sky. And I was like, what are you doing? Like, you should definitely be targeting the other position. But they didn't. So that was dumb. I mean, Pac-12 quarterbacks are dumb, I guess. So that was great. I really liked him. I wish that he would have stayed healthy the entire year. I'll pause. Any disagreement?
No, Kyree was awesome. And honestly, like, it has to be said that Jahlil was playing with a foot injury all year, too. And I thought he was still very effective despite that injury.
Right. So the other... position on the other side, You had a rotation that was somewhat affected by injury. You had, you had like four different guys, sometimes five different guys playing this position. You had Jaleel Florence, who I believe they wanted to be the starter, assuming that he was healthy, but then he was basically at no point 100% healthy. There's the foot thing that you mentioned. There was the injury he got when he was tackling on that screen pass against Washington. You know, he's sort of in and out of the lineup, or at least on a snap count for much of the season. So then he was, so, you know, that sucked. But he was very good, you know, when he played. Like, I liked his film. I don't really think I had much of a complaint with Florence's film. In fact, in some ways, I really thought that he was coming into his own. And for such a young player, you know, I thought it was really bright. I just wish the guy could stay healthy. Again, I'll pause.
I thought that had he been able to actually be and stay healthy, he was Oregon's best corner this year.
Yeah. He was rotating sort of as necessary with Dante Manning. He was the five-star who came in the class prior. I think that Dante Manning flashed a lot of good stuff. I could definitely see why he was a five-star. I could also definitely see why he was at most the third guy in on the field. Like, what's been your assessment of Dante Manning?
Inconsistency, I think, would be the key word there, right? Like, he's, when he's good, he's really, really good. And like, I think that the way he played down the stretch in Florence's absence gives me a lot of like confidence in his ability to at least be a top three corner on the team next year. And if you can keep a player like that and he could take the next step, like, you have, I think you have something there.
I will also mention guys now who exclusively played outside corner because I said we should start on the outside. The other guys that we've seen were Tryquez Bridges. He recently announced that he is transferring to Florida.
Play safety, no less.
Come in as at long last, back to the safety position. Frankly, I've always thought that he's a better cornerback than Oregon fans. Like, I understand why a lot of Oregon fans were disappointed with the guy. I always thought that he had the great underrated virtue of always making the tackle. I thought when he came in as a backup, he played, you know, pretty well, and he was asked to do that a lot. I'll tip my hat to the guy. Good luck at Florida, buddy. We also got to see some of the freshmen. We got to see Pleasant a bit. He played against USC prior to garbage time. In fact, he got a defense of a 2-point conversion, which is hard to do when Caleb Williams is sort of really in the zone. I'll stop there. You want to make any comments about
these
guys?
I thought that both he and Dalen Austin showed really well when they played, but obviously Dalen Austin was hampered by an injury the back half of the season.
Yeah. This is where it gets weird. They brought in the transfer, Nico Reed, from Colorado. He was also Demetrius Martin, the cornerback's coach, protege, just like Christian Gonzalez before him. I really liked Nico Reed's film from when he was at Colorado. I actually, when I was writing on my Colorado preview last year, I was like, I think that Nico Reed might sneakily be a good cornerback. Because like everybody's throwing against the middle of the field against Colorado, but not the edges. And it's like, you know, everybody was scoring against Colorado all the time. And, you know, why bother throwing against the edges if the middle is open all day? But anyway, so I really liked his film. The deal is the dude can't tackle at all. He's kind of small. But like, I really liked his technical coverage skills. At Colorado, he played on the outside. Oregon, like, immediately converted, and for most of the first half of the year, was playing him as like their inside cover corner, like, you know, over the slot. Right. Like, and I thought that's how, and I was like, oh, this is brilliant. This is exactly how they should use this guy. You like cover, you know, little slot receivers where like, hey, you're a little guy. You can tackle the little guys. Like, I like it. Your technical skills, you know, are a plus, and your minus is like not so much of a liability. I really like this. And you're playing in a league in which there's lots of, you know, like four wide offenses. Like, I really like this. Again, I'll pause. What did you think of that?
Yeah, I agree. And I thought that from a matchup standpoint, that made sense. I thought that was why they took him out of the portal in the first place. So far, you're hitting it.
I didn't see it coming. I don't know why. I'll take that hit. I was dumb. I thought they were going to play him on the outside, and the instant they were going to play other guys on the inside, but the instant they moved him to the inside, I was like, that's why. Yeah, brilliant. Anyway, so then what happens is they so now let's talk about the nickels and the safety position. What happens is that they've got some guys. They've got at the beginning of the year, they've got Brian Addison. They've got Steve Stevens. They've got Evan Williams. They've got Tysheem Johnson. And did I miss anybody?
Nope. Well, Brian Addison. Okay. Yeah, you got Addison.
Addison, Stevens, Williams, Tysheem Johnson. Right. In my opinion, their best configuration of sort of the three, interior positions would have been Tysheem Johnson and Brian Addison at the deep safety positions, and then rotating between if you need a thumper on a thumper type of play, Evan Williams, and if you need a cover corner, slot corner kind of guy, Nico Reed on passing downs. And then Stevens should never be on the field.
I'll disagree at all. Continue.
Okay. So then what happens, that was my interpretation. And basically it was sort of what they were doing at the beginning of the year. Then Addison leaves, or like he has a personal issue. I don't really know what it is. I don't really care either. Like, I don't think speculating.
No. He only good. Played the first four games, and about less than 20 snaps a game average, or right around 20 snaps a game average, 19 yeah. snaps a game.
Yes. So the way that they deal with this, and also just sort of being shorthanded at safety, I don't really understand that. They should have had more, and they should have been playing Cole Martin, but they didn't. I really didn't understand that. So the way they deal with that is they put Steve Stevens on the field, they played, so basically every snap then was, Steve Stevens was on the field. Evan Williams was always on the field. Tysheem Johnson was playing in the slot. And Nico Reed was never on the field. I thought you could not put a worse group of three guys, or at least a configuration of three guys. Like, you can't have Evan Williams playing deep safety. He can't cover. You cannot have Tysheem Johnson playing in the slot. He can't cover that type of player. And you can't have Steve Stevens on the field. And you had Nico Reed not on the field
and
at
Cole
all.
And Cole Martin not on the field at all. Fact, I mean, yeah, basically the three guys, you're Martin. Talking about played essentially 100% of snaps for most of the season. When
right.
they were
and Tysheem yeah. Johnson, who I do think, if you go back and listen to the podcast they were recording, which we talked about Tysheem Johnson, I've written an article about Tysheem Johnson when he was at Ole Miss, and their stupid dime all the time defense, which I don't understand why any defensive player would want to play in that idiotic defensive structure. They would have him play in two different positions. In one of the two positions he was really good at, that was the deep safety position. And I figured that's what Oregon brought him in for, was for him to play at. And guess what? When he was in that position, he played it really well for Oregon. The other position that Ole Miss would have him play, which was like down in the box, sort of, the Oregon doesn't have really an analog for that type of position, but the closest thing was what they asked him to do at Oregon when Brian Addison left, which is sort of the play, down, like, try to cover tight ends or cover like slot receivers. Like, they would have him trying to cover Roma Dunze. Like, that's all Washington had to do, was line Roma Dunze up as the number two receiver, and bam, you had Tysheem Johnson trying to cover him. Like, that flipping disaster. So, yeah, that was their configuration for basically the entire back half of the season. And guess what? Every time Oregon would give up a big passing play against Oregon State or against USC or against Washington in the conference championship game, guess it was Tysheem Johnson or Evan Williams or Steve Stevens. Like, every single time it was those guys. And I'm not trying to really knock Tysheem Johnson or Evan Williams. They are good at what they're supposed to be doing, but they were not in the positions they were supposed to be playing because of Addison not being there and because they were playing those guys out of position because they didn't have Nico Reed on the field and they didn't have Cole Martin on the field, and they were sort of being stubborn about that. And instead they had Steve Stevens on the field, which I can't emphasize this enough. There is never a reason to have Steve Stevens on the field.
You are making a lot of people we know in the Duck fandom very, I wouldn't say happy, but nodding loudly in agreement with everything you're saying, because none of this is like new ground, no offense, but you're right. You know, and if you look at Tysheem,
starting in the Wazoo game, all of this was evident in the Wazoo game. In week 8 was when they started doing this. And like, I mean, it's six weeks of my post-game articles. It was, this is what they are choosing to do, and this is why it's a problem. This is what they are choosing to do, and this is why it's a problem. I put clips about it. I would talk about it in my article. If anybody thinks that I'm this like fan of Oregon, all I write are hagiographies of Oregon's defensive staff, not true. Like, every one of my articles, like, this is stupid and it's going to get Oregon in trouble. They have an alternate solution, which is way better, which is this. I don't understand why they're doing it. And oh God, to bit him in the butt. Like, what a shot.
I think if I'm going to defend the staff here, they have access to more information than we do, significantly more information than
we do.
And
obviously.
So I would say that given that we all can agree that the what they put on the field was not ideal, they clearly didn't think they had an alternate solution that was better, or they would have done it, and they didn't. And so I have to give them the benefit of the doubt that they know that the alternative solutions that we think should have been tried didn't exist, because they clearly thought these are the only three playable guys they had in those three positions, and they gave them 100% snaps for 8 straight weeks, despite evidence that it wasn't working.
I mean, every time I went to Autzen Stadium, or if I couldn't go, I would instruct my staff at Addicted to Quack, which are, for some reason we got press passes and I had a dude in the booth, like, I would get your binoculars out. I want you to confirm that Nico Reed is standing there on the sideline, healthy, dressed, and ready to play. You know, then he is available for the entire game, and instead he's just standing there and they're not putting him in. Like, I can confirm. I am confirming to you now, or at least, you know, by dint of my staff.
I'm there too, Hitzelday. I know he was available. I know he was available. That's not the point I was trying to make. Like, yes, he was available. But clearly the staff doesn't agree with you that was the solution. What we can agree that they were wrong or right, but I think what it all boils down to here, and this is why I insist on talking about the defensive backfield separately when you're talking about outside corners versus the safeties and nickels, and I insisted on doing that last season, I insisted on doing it this season, because it is not accurate to say Oregon has a defensive back problem. It is accurate to say Oregon has a safety problem. And I think that last year, and particularly this year,
That's part of it too. Their cup runneth over at cornerback.
Agree.
Why didn't they borrow against the cornerback to shore up the safety?
There's a lot
room.
Of fans in this fan base who think Oregon has a corner problem, and they say that because they're ignorant.
Well,
and I'm trying
dumb.
To make sure that we.
Why are you engaging with people who believe something?
I'm trying
stupid
to educate.
Like that.
I'm trying to educate, which is why we need to talk about corners and safety separately, because we don't have a corner problem. We have a ton of great corners. Our depth is absurd at corner. Our corners are great. Let's talk about safeties now. Whole different story. It's a disaster, and it needs to be fixed.
I think our safety problem is exacerbated by some of the injuries that we had, because Dylan Austin was practicing at safety when he got hurt. Yeah.
Oh, really?
And Kamari Terrell was unhealthy for basically the entire season.
I did know about his. That's unfortunate.
Yeah. So there was some things at play there, right? That definitely hurt the room. And that I think the staff was adjusting with Dylan Austin to try to get Stevens off the field, and then he got hurt. So it was just like, what can you do in that situation? There's not a lot left. And so, like, the way that they're attacking the portal in high school recruiting tells me that they know that's a problem that's going to be addressed this offseason. And I think that the way that they continue to recruit at such an elite level at the corner position will allow them to continue to experiment with Dylan Austin and other players at safety.
It's just, you know, like, you know, Damon David was injured, you know, in spring, and then we never really saw him, and he transferred out to Terrell. You know, I know he's struggled with injuries. Like, you know, I thought that Cole Martin looked playable from the spring game on. He's a coach's kid, you know. Like, I mean, hell, they were playing a coach's kid, Tatum Tuiati, you know, on the defensive line. I generally think that it's like a riskier proposition to play, you know, true freshman on the, you know, closer to the line of scrimmage than further away from the line of scrimmage. And I mean, dude got a pick against Arizona State prior to garbage time. Like, I didn't understand why he didn't get, you know, a position that's obviously harming you the most, and you are confronting the most, you like, depth, you know, situational issues. Like, come on, man. You know, and they had like two other true freshmen, you know, Tyler Turner and Cody DeCambra, both of whom are you know, those guys were 0.89s, you know. Like, you know, yeah, they're true freshmen. Like, were they hurt? Like, do you have any information about that?
I don't. I have nothing.
I just didn't get, like, I know that they were in a crunch. I know that. I know that, you know, because Brian Addison's, you know, personal issue, because, you know, David and Terrell's, you know, injury, you know, Evan Williams is playing with a club on his hand, you know. Like, I know they were in you know, in dire straits, but it's like, look, man, you know, like, they had alternate configurations that they could have explored, and instead they stuck with a single configuration that was clear in weeks 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, and 14, you know, was going to get them in trouble against passing offenses.
Yeah,
that's exactly what happened, and that's the two losses on the season are directly attributable to, in my mind, outside of some of the coaching issues, are to the inability to guard those players when they needed it most. And this is the biggest question mark of next season in my mind is how much are we upgrading safety?
I disagree with that assertion. I disagree with that assertion that the losses to Washington were due to defensive problems. I think nobody can defend a fully functional, healthy version of Michael Penix with that wide receiver core, even if they had the best safety group in the universe, and that Oregon had to outscore Washington. And so, in my opinion, actually, the loss should be pegged on offensive game planning issues, not, you know, defensive problems. I do think that if Oregon made the playoffs, however, that they probably would not have won a national championship this year due to the safety room. For that reason, however.
QB, anything to add?
I got nothing. It was my biggest concern coming into the season, exiting the season. It's my biggest concern.
Yeah, the safety room is critical. You know, obviously, Addison's gone. Steve Stevens is gone. So you don't have to have your rant next year, Hiff. Evan Williams is also gone. So it's basically Tysheem Johnson coming back.
I loved Evan Williams
for his role. No, exactly. Yeah. So you got Tysheem coming back.
I don't want anyone to
you need help.
I really love Tysheem Johnson. Like, I just really just need, he just safety. Needs to back out and play deep safety.
I totally agree. That's where he, and I think he could be a very effective player there for Oregon. And I think he does a lot of things well. We just put him, when he didn't do well was when we put him in a position that we shouldn't have been putting him in, but we didn't have any better options.
It's just, yeah. I mean, he's just not a stand on the, he's just not like a press man, like cover you from the line guy. He's a play deeps. He's like a take the angle and something got through. Well, I'll find it and kill it. You know, he's a that kind of
in the run game.
He's really smart.
I don't love him playing deep half in zone. He's not as limited athletically as Stevens, but he is limited athletically in terms of range.
But yeah, we'll see what they have. Other than that, obviously the true freshman or incoming true freshman Aaron Flowers might be a guy who needs to contribute early in year one, and hopefully he can be, and I think that'd be great for a lot of reasons. Obviously, Oregon has been in the portal for some guys who could be instant starters there, and I think that's what you need. And then you need some of those guys in the room to make a jump, right? Or be available. Like, I mean, Kamari Terrell is probably the one that sticks out the most just because his length of time in the room. If he can be healthy this year, and then you've got the 23 kids, the Cody DeCambras, the Tyler Turners, Colin Gill, or I think maybe even more like EQB is something you talked about earlier is, you know, guys like Cole Martin and Daylon Austin maybe playing inside more, and that bolsters your inside depth because you have such an embarrassment of riches on the outside.
I do think there's a lot to the notion of like playing what would effectively be a three cornerback defensive structure, like, or at least it would have been if this continued to be a Pac-12 team. It's not now. Like,
I mean, the option of doing both, like, right? Like, you're playing against USC, so you're playing your three corner defense, and then you're playing against Michigan or Iowa. So against those teams, you're probably playing four backs, but you know, somebody in between, you're playing maybe Michigan State or somebody. You're playing more of your run stopping or your safety style nickel.
But I mean, it like having a deep cornerback room is a great thing to have. Like, yeah, like it's you know, it's an excellent cornerback room. Like, no reason to complain about that. It's just, you know, I thought it was very strange, you know, given it was not just that they could borrow against it in the sense of like, hey, let's convert a guy, you know, and make a makeshift safety. It was like they had ways of using corners as inside corners to free up dudes who they could have been using as deep safeties. And it's like, that's why you get guys who are sort of like that, you know, they're twofer type of dudes, you know. So that's why it was so strange they weren't playing. It was also strange that I thought they had dudes who were playable as true freshmen on a team where, like, practically the team motto is if you're good enough, you're old enough. And it's like, there's a bunch of 2023s who didn't really see meaningful playing time in the secondary. Whereas on the defensive line, it was like their calling card that they were playing 2023. So, like, I didn't understand that one either.
Well, I just have to go back to, they must know something we don't know.
Excellent. All right, we should stop torturing QB11. All right. I would like to.
Those are good.
As I said, I would like to, I wasn't joking about it or just making pleasantries. I would like to, if you want to, at some point next week, schedule us up for a podcast.
Yeah, we'll definitely do it. Once we get through signing day and all that,
hopefully
QB
will have recovered his voice by
then. Well, I got to figure out what's going on.
All right, well, let's call it good. This is Hithloday One from Addicted to Quack. It never rains on this podcast. Check out all of his awesome work over at these two places. Of course, follow QB11 at QB11SD on Twitter. Follow the podcast at QB11 Show. We are like 15 followers short of 1,000. So if you're the one to get us over that magic line, I don't know, maybe there'll be some sort of shout out on the show or something. And then, of course, I'm at DouglasTS on Twitter. Thank you all for listening. It's been a great episode. It's been a lot of fun. Hithloday, thank you again for joining us. And we can't wait to have you back.
My pleasure. It was good talking to you guys.
Good night, everyone.